Welcome to the talk show worth talking about, Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio, with your co-hosts, Kevin Hogan, founder of the Healing Stigma Program, and Scott Fullerton, voice of Left of Straight Radio. From A-list entertainers to hometown heroes, join Kevin and Scott as they interview those on the cutting edge of challenging stigma with insight, humor, and always compassion. Give them your ears and they'll open your mind. For positive talk with positive results, you're listening to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. Now here are your hosts, Scott and Kevin.
All right, everybody, welcome. It's another great edition of Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. I am your co-host, Scott Fullerton, as always with my co-host, Kevin Hogan. Kevin, welcome this wonderful Thursday. How you doing?
Hey, happy to be here, Scott. How are we doing, my friend? It seems like everything in the world is centering on Ohio these days. How are you? How are you holding up under all this pressure?
It's just crazy. Political-wise, we're the center of the universe. All my little stories I've been doing lately on my radio show has been centered in Ohio. We have Ghostbusters in Ohio. I just found out today. I mean, it's crazy here in Ohio. I don't know what we have going on. How was your neck of the woods?
It's New England, and so there was this supposed, post-tropical depression or whatever the heck they called it. It was just a bit of a breeze, but we thankfully got a little bit of rain. Very conducive for writing and walking dogs, so very happy about that. And for the folks that follow along, there'll be another article, blog, whatever you want to call it these days, however you read it, coming out. And it's going to be about stigma management. What if you are stigmatized? Kind of like after where my other one left off, this one is going to be, I think, quite interesting with what's going on these days.
And this is going to be a blog post for the website or for a Huffington Post? This is for the website, right?
Let's see who gets it, because at this point right now it basically is about where I decide to pull that lever, and that's probably going to be a cup of coffee and take a look at my partner in all things. My lovely wife is my primary reader in that. We always take a look at things and have a cup of coffee, so I'm not sure yet. I do like I'll tell you this right now, I was very, very, very grateful to what the Huffington Post has been doing lately with these impact voices, so I usually take a look over and see what's going on and then see where I'm going to put it. It'll always be on the Healing Stigma website eventually.
Super duper. Yeah, you got such great tracks on that last Olympics one. It was so well written, so congratulations on that.
Thanks, my friend. Well, actually, while you mention it there, sorry to do a little bit of the self-advertising, but I think it's really important. For the folks, even if they've looked at it, go check out the Healing Stigma website again now, because been really kind of looked at, and some of the marketing people have been looking at it, making it clear as to what we do for the clients that we serve. I'm really proud of what they've been doing lately. It really helps me get the word out there. So, all these things, are basically different ways of continuing the conversation to heal stigma. But the website's been, I don't know if redone would be the right word, but quietly and really, really super, super done by a few folks that are, I'd say, much, much smarter at marketing than I am.
Fantastic. That is awesome. I love hearing that.
Yeah. What about you? Hey, what about the launch of all the new radio, the whole entire network and everything else going now? So how are you doing? How are you holding up under all this? What's going on there?
Pretty good. It's an intense week. Yesterday I had a little rough day yesterday. I had some glitches happen, which they do. But that's okay.
Yeah.
We started with our second season of Left of Straight Radio yesterday. I had some, thank you so much, great interviews. Got to speak with one of the girls from Fear the Walking Dead, the television show and web series.
Oh, wow.
She's from New Zealand. And I love the accents, of course. So she was amazing.
Yeah.
And a past
cool.
American Idol winner. So that was a lot of fun. And today we did the premiere of our new show, Standing on My Soapbox. It's a weekly show for current events.
Yeah.
We talk about LGBT news, pop culture, and politics, of course. So that was premiered today, and that was a lot of fun with my good friend Greg Archer out of Palm Springs. He's a writer and actor out there, so that was a great show. We have our show premiering tomorrow. Well, it's not premiering, but I'm going to call it season two. Everything's season two tomorrow, so what the heck?
Yeah.
Even though we've been on six
months,
we're the new season. I think we'll go on Left and Straight Radio.
Well, this is a huge show, too. I mean, kind of jumping around, but this is a huge show with our guest tonight and a really useful show, I think, that's coming up. So it actually is a great relaunching of everything right now. So, yeah,
exactly.
I'm excited.
Exactly. It's going to be great. Yeah. And then a week from, not this Saturday, but a week from Saturday, the last show that we have scheduled for this season starts. It's called Rust Belts and Rainbows. And it's basically a regional show. It goes from, takes care of my area here from Cleveland through Akron, my area of Youngstown, Erie, and Pittsburgh, which is called the Rust Belt of the Midwest here because of all our manufacturing hubs and everything. So we're doing Rust Belts and Rainbows, a local show. It's going to be on Saturday mornings starting a week from Saturday. So it should be kind of fun. Doing good.
How exciting. How exciting. That is brilliant. Congratulations. Well, I saw the most it was absolutely crazy. Did you see the picture of the I think it was the tails of the two what do they call it now? Hill Force One or whatever. It was Hillary's plane and Trump's plane both landed. Was it in Cleveland?
They were in Cleveland.
They were on
together.
The same tarmac, just a few hundred feet away from each other. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. They were here over
there. That doesn't show you the center. Yeah, that doesn't show you, you know, where you are is the center of this, you know, tug of war in the Electoral College. You guys are literally ground zero there. So what's it like with all this going on? What's it like on the street? What's the feel like?
Well, it's really crazy here. I got to tell you, we had my area, my county is primarily very Democratic traditionally for a long time.
Yeah.
It's been, I mean, every office Democratic. There's very few Republicans in and out. So it's mainly gone that way. But there's a lot of people. We had over, I think they said 60,000 residents switch over to Trump in our area here, which was a lot.
Yeah, you were mentioning that.
So he's catching up. So every year over Labor Day weekend, we do the Canfield Fair. It's the biggest. It's our county fair for my county here. It's the biggest county fair in all of Ohio, and it goes every Wednesday before Labor Day through the Monday of Labor Day. So we had that this weekend.
Okay.
And a real interesting thing happened. The Republican tent, for part of their tent, they, in support of Donald Clinton, they asked people to help them raise money for Trump and help him build his wall by literally selling bricks. They sold red bricks for like $5 and gold bricks for $10. And you were able to write on them, put whatever you want. They literally built a wall around their tent in the Republican. And it was so controversial, but it got a lot of local press here because we had a lot of immigrants here talking about it. And believe it or not, Al Jazeera, the Al Jazeera news outlet,
network.
Even ran an article and interviewed someone from here. So it has been a crazy weekend with it. Politics in Ohio is a crazy thing.
Wow. Yeah, of course. Well, freedom of speech.
Exactly.
Let there be debate right now. And how far are we from them going head to head in a debate? What are we, like 2-3 weeks away now? It's coming close, right?
We are actually 2 weeks away. It's going to be out at Hofstra University. Oh, you know me, right?
Yeah.
Remember our good friend? We have Dr. Vince Pellegrino. He's the professor that we had on. Dr. Vince is a professor of communications at Hofstra.
Yeah.
And that's where the first debate's going to be. It's actually 2 weeks from tonight, I believe. And so I messaged him and I said, you got to get me and my mom into these debates. You got to. He said, it is so tight there for students and for faculty. He said he's lucky to get himself in, but it's going to be
a
lot of fun, though. But he's going to be there and he may even get to interview the candidates. He's not sure, but he has his own radio show there in Hofstra, right? So Dr. Vince may be interviewing the candidates.
So a couple weeks from now.
Today.
All right.
And then tonight, I believe, on MSNBC, or last night, Wednesday night, on MSNBC was the candidates forum that they were posting on Commander-in-Chief with all the veterans of the audience. So I didn't have a chance to see that yet, but it's going to be an interesting to see how that went over. I heard it was very interesting, so we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things internationally as well that are just going to be interesting watching. I mean, there's discussion now about building a wall along the in Calais. For the amount of talking about stigma, but it's called the Calais jungle camp is literally what it's been termed, and the amount of people trying to jump onto trucks illegally to make it to the UK through the tunnel or whatever. But I mean, you know, the talking of walls, the talking of the movement in extreme right wing politicians. You've got look at again stigma and language. Look at what went on with President Obama declining the meeting with I'm drawing a blank on his name, but it's the the new really hard line against drug crime. The president of Philippines.
Yeah, I don't remember his name either, but I know it's the Philippines.
Right,
yeah.
And it was over, and it's over language. I mean, it's something, you know, that I'm not even going to choose to repeat here. But you know, I mean, he even and the same president. I guess he called the Pope the same thing as well. But anyway, I'm not going to get into it. But I mean, when we're talking about stigma going left and right and everywhere else, you know, it's coming up in politics. It's coming up internationally. The idea of separation, the idea of walls, what this means. The you know, freedom of speech, when it's there or not, it's a very interesting time. It's fascinating. And that's why, and it, again, not trying to build too quick bridges here, one of the places where it comes up so quickly is in the workplace, and that's why I'm so excited about tonight's guest. Really am.
It's going to be fantastic. Joining us in just a little bit is Philip Gordon of the Gordon Law Group out in your area in Boston. Amazing work they do in employment law, and I'm so looking forward to speaking to him. But it's going to be a tonight. I think we're going to have a lot.
Well,
I've got to
put some cards on the table here because Phil Gordon is actually one of the folks who's named in the acknowledgments of my Riestrat, of my poetry book. He's been a friend and a real talking about a brilliant mind. And I'm not just trying to build this up, but in terms of someone, I couldn't think of someone better when it comes to what can happen so quickly in the workplace. And people have been asking me these questions, and you know, we have the peer-to-peer as well as the professionals group on healing stigma on, you know, through the website. But the workplace, we spend so much time there, and we kind of take it for granted that everything runs well until it doesn't.
Right.
You know, and so again, yes, I mean, this is one of those things that I can't wait to have this show tonight where I might interrupt a little bit less than normal because I'm so interested to let Phil say what he has to say. That's
well,
the truth.
Let's go ahead to it then. We're going to have him call in here in just a moment. Let's take a quick break. We're going to play a little bit of our good friend Levi Kreis, who was, of course, the star in Million Dollar Quartet on Broadway. Play a little bit hello, and when we come back, we're going to speak to Philip Gordon. You're listening to Scott and Kevin on Healing Stigma on Left to Straight Radio. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Sometimes I smoke more than cigarettes.
righty, we are back. That was Levi Christ with Hello. Guys, today Kevin and I are so excited. We're joined by Philip Gordon of the Gordon Law Group in Boston, Massachusetts. They specialize in employee advocacy law. He was recently named one of the top 100 lawyers in New England and has been considered a Massachusetts super lawyer for the past 10 years. His firm represents all levels of employees, CEO to the service worker, and they're constantly following and staying ahead of changes in legislation and developments in employee law. From discrimination to wages and overtime issues to Title IX and severance agreements, they've handled a myriad of cases advocating for the working man or woman. We're so excited to have him on the show tonight as we tackle stigma in the workplace. Please welcome to the show, Philip Gordon. Phil, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on with you guys today. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's
hey, Phil,
pleasure.
This is Kevin. Thank you so much as well. Thank you. Thank you, my friend. Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear your voice as well.
Well, I'm sure Kevin appreciates another Bostonian, and he's always good. You said you're very lawyer-like. Usually I have to get Kevin to translate fellow Bostonian, but I think we're going to do good here. So I like lawyer-likeness. That's going to help me a lot.
I'll do my best, Scott.
I appreciate it. Did you grow up in the Boston area? What got you interested in law?
I was born and raised in Boston. I actually grew up in Brookline, went to Brookline High, and a little bit sort of history of kind of how I got into all this stuff. As a teenager, I worked in sort of three different industries. I worked in the construction industry, doing labor work and painting and things of that nature, some carpentry work. I worked in restaurants, and I also worked in the dry cleaning business. In that one, we were a business owner and had a fascinating introduction, if you will, to how the law impacts life, both as an employer and as an employee. And that sprouted my interest in law, and here I am today.
That's awesome. And it seems to always be the case. Whenever I talk to lawyers and ask where they got started, we're really interested in their childhood issues, such as for you, employment. I know a lot of people that were interested in advocacy for children, they go into children's law, and it's just really great that you're able to follow your passion like that. Has it been as rewarding as you hoped?
Yeah, I've been very fortunate. I've spent a little bit of time on both sides. I spent some years at Halen Dorr on the employer, if you will, the corporate side of the world. I spent some time as well as general counsel of a large local company before it was sold off. And the real question for me was, what do I do navigating forward in the employment field and looking at what was going on out in the world and looking at how the balance of power, if you will, I was drawn to the employee side of it and working with employees and at all levels of the workforce, whether you're a service worker or a line worker making $8 or $9 an hour at minimum wage or you're a CEO making millions, in all circumstances, in all those cases, every one of them needs the protections and needs the help of an employment attorney to really deal with and help them navigate the legal issues as well as just the social issues as well as just the business issues that they run into with their employers to work through things. And at all levels, everyone does need some assistance, we've found. And so we're in a great spot now. We've been in this business, been doing this for over 20 years now. And we've been very fortunate, and we're growing very well and actually going through an expansion mode right now as we work to represent lots more folks dealing with lots more issues and at some levels of class actions too.
And Phil, this is Kev here. Now, I just want to say one thing here. It's more of a comment for folks to know because, as I said coming into this, Phil is a friend of mine. He's someone who I greatly respect his opinion on so many things. And anytime, you know, in terms of the writing, when it comes to the employment side, I'll be immediately trying to figure out at times, even before I bug you, Phil, what you know, we'll toss around. What would Phil say in this situation? And I'm often and pleasantly surprised by what your answers are. But one of the things I just want to say is in this town where we are, and I know larger than that as well, but Scott, for you to understand this, it's amazing when you see someone like Phil who has the knowledge that he has in a city like this And I mean, what's the other one? There's, I'm not trying to embarrass you, but I just got to say it, the best lawyers in the country. I mean, Phil knows how the how people work here, from, again, from the service all the way up to the CEO. When you walk down, you know, a street and we're talking about something, and you see how Phil understands how people work, as you said, from the restaurant industry all the way through, it is fascinating to have someone who is so adept in employment and then see that, I don't know how to put it here, but how quickly that balance, we take it for granted that the balance is there and it's, you know, done properly when you go to work. And in a city like Boston, it is so fast paced here that, how can I say it? It's gotta be something that was inbred in you, Phil. Where did your work ethic come from? Because I'm always fascinated by it.
I've been fortunate through my life. I've had the work ethic at a lot of levels. Comes from two places. It comes one spot from my parents, who always worked hard as when I was young. My brothers and I always had businesses, so we learned quite quickly that the harder we worked and the more dedication we put into the work that we were doing, the more successful we would be. And then I went to Bowdoin College up in Maine and had some really good mentoring for some great professors up there who, you know, really gave me some strong indications and strong guidance that, you know, the work you put into something is what you get out of it.
Yeah.
The sort of the bigger picture, if you will, of it in terms of, you know, what we bring to thinking about employment law, and we talk about leveling the playing field a lot in my business. And we also talk about, you know, bringing a real business mind to the work that we're doing and a practical approach to the problems that we're facing. And to think through, you know, what is it that's really going on and how can we really be helpful to someone and how can we really assist our clients as they work through it. We think about balance of power. You know, it's fascinating if you've just been watching the news just in the last, you know, few weeks alone. We've been watching the Fox News, Roger Ailes matter, and you think about a woman like Gretchen Carlson, right? She's a Stanford graduate. She's a, you know, Miss America 1989, top of the world, and any woman out there looking up, and any person out there looking up would say, wow, you know, I'll bet if I had the power of Gretchen Carlson, what's happening to me at work wouldn't be happening to me.
Right.
And then you realize, not too long later, that she's been suffering with workplace issues for a long time. And at least from an allegations perspective, if you actually read the complaint, and I know she had a $20 million settlement and a public apology from Fox News, which gives you some pretty strong indication of what she was going through, that here she was complaining about sexual harassment in her workforce. So I talk to a lot of women and a lot of folks on a daily basis, and we talk about, you know, what's the practical reality if you make that complaint? What's going to happen to you? So they tell me that this is what's going on to them at work. Something bad is happening. They're being sexually harassed by their boss or by their coworker, or they're suffering some form of discrimination or something like that. And they ask me, so what do I do next? And I work them through. So in this, you can make complaints internally. You can make complaints externally. You can file complaints at the Mass Commission Against Discrimination or the EEOC or someplace else. But practically, what happens to you if you do that? And if you follow the example of Gretchen Carlson, right, her allegations were, I made those complaints, Fox News didn't do what they were supposed to, and then I was fired because of it.
Right.
And we say, oh, my gosh, if that could happen to Gretchen Carlson, what is the balance of power in the workforce? Someone asked me the other day, they said, so what are you doing as a law firm? And we're growing dramatically right now because we're starting to realize and people are starting to understand that the balance of power in the workplace has shifted somewhat dramatically towards the employers. And their employers are getting savvier with lawyers. They're getting savvier with arbitration agreements. They're getting savvier with the understanding that they can just step on people. And there's a lot that we can do on the employee side to remedy those problems. Now, for Gretchen Carlson, obviously, she got a $20 million settlement. Was that the right number? Was it the right settlement? Will she feel whole after all that? I have no idea. But there are definitely things you can do. But the balance of power is really the issue that draws us in, really the issue of what it is that employment law is about.
You get the insight to us because as a layman, we kind of see this, that she got a $20 million settlement and da-da-da. It seems like all well and good, but I'm sure from your standpoint, it's like it had to be really bad for them to publicly apologize $20 million and to be a national, usually those things are swept under the rug. So when you see something this big, it's got to be pretty flagrant, right?
It's typically pretty bad if the numbers get that large. But even in her circumstance, I suspect the number could have been significantly larger, and I don't know, because it came with a public apology and a public acknowledgement. So maybe she took less money because
right.
she wanted to do something for the workplace. And you'll oftentimes have individuals say to me, I'm not the only woman here suffering this problem of sexual harassment. Right?
Yeah.
I'm not the only one going through this. And because I ask them early on when we talk, when we first sit down to meet, and I say, what are your goals? And whether you're talking about discrimination on the basis of your race or your gender or your age or whatever it is that you're coming in, whatever your particular issue is that your sexual orientation, whatever you're dealing with. And oftentimes many people will say to me, it's not just about me. If I'm going to go through with this and I'm going to put a lawsuit together, I'm going to make a formal complaint, I want to fix it for everybody. This particular manager has to go, or this particular company has to change their policy with the way they do things. And it could very well be that one of Gretchen Carlson's goals in bringing that complaint that she filed was to actually get Fox News to change the way it does business.
Yeah.
And maybe one of the things that they did to do that was firing Roger Ailes or working on some kind of separation package with him, a public apology. Maybe there were some maybe there's some new training that has to go on internally with the HR staff. Maybe there's new ways that the Fox News has to deal with particular complaints. Maybe there's investigations that have to be done. I don't know, because we haven't seen it, what it
right.
is that she obtained in that settlement. But to your question, which is, you know, $20 million seems like quite a bit. Well, I don't know. That may not have been much at all. That may have been a significantly lower number, because she may have traded it for a whole bunch of other stuff because it satisfied some other
yeah.
goal of hers in connection with her litigation.
Okay.
Well, my question now actually is better time. So thank you, Scott. We're absolutely perfect here. But my I think I heard this is that she actually had recorded some conversations, and I believe Ailes was on this, and I think it was on a cell phone or something like this. So the thing is, again, it's one of these more of an observation than a question. But you know, when we look at things like the the instant Facebook use there for the woman who, when her partner was shot by the and I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on the name right now. I can't remember, but she was using Facebook instant messaging to get that out. And so here, again, technology, it's like everywhere we look at these different things now, sometimes technology is making a huge difference. And from what I heard, that, whatever was on that phone, is one of those things that, and I wonder sometimes, Phil, if you run into this, which is a person will be saying this, and oftentimes, where is the proof? Do you know what I'm saying? Because that sometimes can be such a hard question to then answer without drawing others into, say, in a workplace situation that then does start to involve more than just one person. How does that happen, and how is technology playing into that?
Technology is a fascinating part of today's discussion with employment law. You know, so when we talk to juries and we work on our cases and we work them up through either mock trials or otherwise, juries expect CSI style evidence these days. That's
yeah,
just what they want.
Yeah.
So if it's just what we call he said, she said, I
right.
say you harassed me, you say you didn't. Juries are not convinced anymore that that's enough. They want dick pics. They want text
yeah.
messages, harassing text messages. They want, video. They want some kind of hard evidence.
Yeah.
That indicates that someone's doing what it is that they say they're doing. It's making things, on the one hand, significantly more difficult to prove. On the other hand, it's also making things significantly easier to prove because the ubiquity of technology. Well, technology is in
yeah.
so many places these days
right.
that on one hand,
Mark
Garagos. On one hand, juries want video. On the other hand,
yeah.
I could actually get it.
Yeah. yeah.
And
yeah, you've got Chris Brown. You've got Chris Brown and the beauty queen. You've got Chris Brown and the beauty queen Instagramming while the cops are outside the house.
It's stunning what people will do, right?
Yeah.
It's really, truly amazing. So it's also enabling.
Yeah.
On the one hand, it's enabling harassment and enabling discrimination in ways we've never seen before. On the other hand, it's also uncovering harassment and discrimination and giving people courage to come forward when they wouldn't have in the past. In the past, you had to have a witness because there was no way to, there was no recording of anything going on in any shape or form. And by the way, just as a quick aside, recording is a very, very, very tricky thing to do, right? Because there are state laws, like in Massachusetts, that prohibit, we call them two-party, it's a two-party consent state, and there's lots of two-party consent states out there, that prohibit recording someone without their acknowledgement. That's actually a felony. So you got to be very careful.
Careful.
Employees will tell me all the time, you know, I'm going to record this guy doing this. And I say, hey, be really careful if you do that because you might be committing a crime yourself.
Right.
I'm not saying employees don't do it. I'm not saying people don't call me and say, I've got it anyways. If someone leaves a voicemail, well, then they've put their own voice on a voicemail. They've obviously consented to or at least understood they're being recorded. But the surreptitious recording becomes difficult. All right.
Yeah.
That aside said, at the same time, the technology is enabling individuals to do things that they never would have been able to do before. So you're getting online cyberbullying that exists. Well, if online cyberbullying exists, you're going to see electronic bullying of coworkers. You're going to see sexting. You're going to see, dick pics. You're going to see text messages from people that are beginning to record contemporaneously the very complaints or the very evidence that supports the complaint that the individual is coming to me with, and that is giving them the courage to come forward and when they say to me, I've been sexually harassed. 20 years ago, I would have said to them, I need a witness to it. So find one of your friends who's willing to step up and say, I saw so-and-so do X and such. Now they're coming to me and saying, I've been sexually harassed. Here's the text messages that I've been receiving. And I'm saying, you now have independent evidence other than your own testimony that's actually not someone else having to come forward and subject themselves potentially to a problem, but you've got independent evidence that can support you all on your own. And actually, believe it or not, the juries and other people really want that CSI stuff. So that's actually oftentimes better.
Yeah, and by the way, just for our listeners, this is going on currently. While here in Boston, we have the debate going on as to whether or not police will wear body cams. I mean, the technology is exploding all around us in the headlines here. When I look at it every day right now, you know, in the workplace,
it's a big deal. It's going on all over the country. Body cams are a big issue all over the country. We've got cameras in. We're seeing employers now. We're installing cameras all over their workplaces. We're seeing key logging of people's computer workstations. We're seeing tracking on people's cell phones. We're seeing GPS tracking of individuals. So if you carry your employer's cell phone, the employer may actually be tracking your every move because you keep it in your pocket. And so it's tracking everywhere you go. We're definitely seeing GPSs in the cars. So if you drive a vehicle for a company, that vehicle is absolutely... I got a GPS mark in it, so the companies, they say so they can find their cars. More reality is they just want to make sure their employees aren't taking the vehicles out and, you know, going off and doing personal shopping and things of that nature.
But
there's an enormous amount of electronic tracking going on with employees and employers. You know, they have their own minefield to navigate, so there are questions about whether or not you can put those, whether or not you can put videotaping, for example, in locker rooms. And employers say, well, that's where stealing and theft comes from. People go take the stuff in the locker room, and then they stuff it in their pants and walk out with it. And then employee shrinkage is a major issue for, you know, retailers. And employers are saying, I need to put videotapes in the locker rooms. And we say, well, but wait a second. Your people are naked in those rooms. And that crosses a line that's inappropriate. And so there has to be some kind of balancing between your need to avoid inventory shrinkage and our, you know, employees' need to protect their own personal privacy and not be naked on video cameras for other employees to you know, gawk at or ogle at or things of that nature. So There's a balancing that goes on, but technology is playing a major role. And we're even
in a bit of a different note. In a bit of a different note there, but a follow-up to it, Phil. I don't know if you saw it, but I think I read where the I think she was a former model, took a body-shaming image of another woman at a gym, an older woman, and she now may be facing jail time over that. It looks as though it's going to be up to the judge now, but it could be as much as 6 months jail time for sharing it. I think it was Instagram publicly online, body-shaming.
Yeah, it was actually a boy playmate who did it. She was like a playmate of the year. And she had taken a picture of an older, chubbier girl in the gym and shared it on her Instagram and everything. And it happened a couple months ago, and she was kind of shamed on social media at first for it. But they just recently found the person that she had taken the picture of, and the government actually, or the city government, asked to press charges. So that's where it's going right now. It's a very interesting case.
Yeah.
It was Danny Mathers being investigated by L.A. It was a fat-shaming photo, and she put it on Snapchat.
We've been watching that.
Yep, it's on Snapchat. It does have an interesting sort of concept that exists in there. And by the way, you think about technology, we haven't even talked about other parts of technology because, disability and other things exist. Disability discrimination exists in the world, and one of the things that technology is also allowing employers to do is if they're collecting DNA samples or collecting blood samples from individuals, they're now using technology as predictive mechanisms to determine your long-term health.
Yeah.
And then they'd be terminating individuals who are, more susceptible to diabetes or other sort of long-term health conditions that could cause problems in the workplace, or they're finding out women are pregnant before they've been announced.
Minority Report hits the workplace.
Yeah, it's so Orwellian when you think about it. I mean, and who knows where it's going to stop. If it doesn't even stop at employers, what if insurance companies start demanding CEOs to have cameras in their offices to make sure they don't get stuck with sexual harassment cases? I mean, the it could go crazy, but it's interesting.
It can go crazy. And the beauty at some level, so what do we do as employment lawyers, and what do we do as a society to protect an individual's right to exist in a workplace free of discrimination?
Yeah.
That,
right.
At a lot of levels, that is what we do here, but at a lot of levels is what our law is all about. Our law is all about making sure that individuals in protected classes, right, live free from, unreasonable interference in their work, in the performance of their work, or free from discrimination, some type of adverse employment action that happens because of some type of characteristic they have related to their race, their sexual orientation, gender, age, health conditions, or disability, whether they take FMLA, things, or they make complaints about sexual harassment, things of that nature, and to keep them from being retaliated against when they do it. So all these technologies are pushing boundaries for employers. But they're pushing boundaries for employment law as well, because they give people an opportunity to allow their prejudices to infect their decisions about other people in the workplace. I'll give you a fast example. So think about men and women, right? Think about gender disparity for a moment, right? We know that women, there's a pay gap that exists in the workplace. Women are paid basically 82% on average of what men are paid. But let's look at something different, some of the reasons potentially why. You think about a woman, and we're seeing this in today's presidential race, you think about a woman who is aggressive at work, and a man who is aggressive at work. And if you talk and you go look and you read the reviews of those particular individuals, right, the woman is seen as a bitch, and the man is seen as tough.
Right. So true.
Same exact behavior, completely different characterization in the employment reviews and the performance review file. You might even see it, right, and I don't want to get into sort of politics in the perspective of, which side do you support, whether you're Republican or Democrat, because it doesn't frankly matter. But if you watch today's presidential race, you see it the same way when evaluating. People talk about Hillary Clinton's behavior and people talk about Donald Trump's behavior. You don't even have to look at today's political political races. You can look at it in the boardrooms.
Yep.
Quite clearly, any woman who is taking a step up to do something right? It's a negative. When a man is taking that step up to do something, it is considered a positive. And how does a woman advance herself in the workplace and move up through the supervisory ranks if she doesn't show what we would colloquially call moxie? Right? And that's what we encourage our men to do, to show the moxie, but we don't encourage that from our women. In fact, when we read the reviews, the performance reviews show that women, the language used to review women is significantly different. So what we're talking about when we deal with these issues is making sure that either the stigmas or the infectious views, if you will, the negative views that we have of particular gender or race or otherwise, that those views don't infect the workplace itself or the supervisor's review or treatment of people. So the technologies are allowing us to move things are moving significantly faster, and they're potentially giving us so much information about individual employees that it's almost making it impossible not to allow racist or sexist or ageist thoughts to infect the decisions about people. You'll see it in, for example, people will go for hiring, and they'll put their application in for a company. And back in the day, you'd get the resume, you'd read it, you'd bring the person in for an interview, and that's the first time you'd see what they look like, because you didn't know the person before that. And if they didn't have a name that was obviously related to a particular national origin or, you know, maybe a particular race or a particular gender, it'd be very difficult with a gender-neutral and race-neutral name to make a decision about an individual when you just see their resume. Now, with technology, you can put that person's name into the internet, and you can probably find a profile of them on LinkedIn. You can probably find a profile of them on Facebook. You might even see Snapchats. You might even see Vines or Instagrams or other places where that person is going to put images of himself or herself and background information about himself or herself, because people are sharing as part of their personal lives.
And that's made the news
and
a lot
now
recently, hasn't it?
You say that again?
I said, and that's kind of made the news a lot recently, where there has been cases where people have not gotten a job because their would-be employers have gone in and checked out their social media profiles.
Absolutely. So there's two things. It's a double-edged sword, right? There's two things to that. So what I don't want to say is poor social media profiles should not be reviewed and should not subject someone to a rejection at the date of hire. That's what I'm not saying, right? And I'm going to talk about that in one second. What I'm saying is that social media profiles allow employers to learn a lot about a person before actually meeting them and set up immediately a whole pile of preconceived notions potentially about what that person is going to be like when they come in the door.
Got it.
And you can see it, for example, when you ask an individual for their credit background check. Like you do a credit check on a person. If you do a credit check before they come in and maybe you see they have poor credit, whatever, you make a quick judgment about what that person is going to be like. What you're not thinking of, by the way, is that massive percentages of credit background checks are wrong. There's lots of reasons why people have lousy credit. They may be because their parents got sick and they had to mortgage the house to take care of a family member or all sorts of things. It may have nothing to do with being an irresponsible person conceptually, as we like to say. But a credit check does give you some information that employers believe is a reliable way to do it. I don't think there is reliable information in a credit check that indicates information about a person. I think you got to sit down and figure out each person has their own individual circumstances, much like race. People will say that I hear it all the time. Well, the reason why I don't hire black people is because just look at the prison population. There's more black people in prison than white people, so that must mean something. Well, no, it doesn't.
Right.
That's a ridiculous comment, a completely ridiculous comment. Or I don't hire women because they're just going to get pregnant and leave me anyways. And they're not going to stay that long, and why would I want to invest all my money into training a woman who's, you know, 24 years old when she's gone in 4 years when she goes and gets married and has kids.
Yep.
And that was a waste. So I could have just hired a guy. Well, that's a ridiculous comment, too. And
right.
So every individual has to – every decision should be individualized. But social media is allowing us to develop a full set of preconceived notions prior to getting a person inside because we see a picture of them. And we have no idea the reality. First of all, we oftentimes don't even know if the social media profile is legitimately that person. But assuming it is, it allows us to make a set of preconceived judgments about the person. Maybe we don't even call the person in. The studies the EEOC has done is that they take resumes that are virtually identical, but one person has a classically African-American name, and one person has a classically white name. And the classically white name will get interviews almost every time. And the classically African-American name won't.
Yeah.
And it just shows a fast bias that exists, and social media allows that.
Yeah.
Of course, the other side of social media is people post the worst stuff on social media. Now, that's a different issue. If you're not hiring someone because you go to their social media profile and they've got, you know, Nazi paraphernalia up there and their Twitter profile has racist rants running through it, or they're sexist or whatever, or they're crazy and they make, you know, nasty homophobic comments or whatever it is they're doing, okay, that's something you got to learn as an employer. And guess what? Now social media became a quite useful way to cull someone out of the pool of resumes. But there you're not using a class. You're not using a the individual's membership in a protected class to decide not to hire them. You're not saying, because this person's black, I'm not bringing them in. Because this person's, a woman, I'm not bringing them in. Or because, he looks like he's over 40 or looks like he's over 50 or even over 60, God forbid, right? I'm not bringing that person in. Talk to a person over 50, right? If they have their picture online or they have a resume that says they went to college and graduated in, 1982, forget it.
Yeah.
You can't even get an interview for those guys, let alone get the job. So if the decision's made on the base of membership and protected class, that's where the problem is, and that is where social media and the massive amounts of data out there can basically bubble up prejudices and bubble up decisions that are made.
Well, here's a really interesting one, Phil. This just came out the other day, and Scott, I don't know if you saw this. I think I put it out on my social media stream on the Healing Stigma site. But did you see the report that came out from, I think it was the University of Southern California, on the entertainment industry out of Hollywood? This is exactly what you're talking about. And I wasn't even preparing this to talk about it, but it's looking at this big data that can now be accrued from going in and looking at different focuses at one time. But in, 2015, there were however many speaking roles in all of the films made in Hollywood, and less than, guess how many percent were LGBT speaking roles?
Right.
Less than 1%. Less than 1%. Now, of course, this is entertainment. I realize it's different. But again, these things weren't able – however you're cracking these numbers, this report is fascinating because what it doesn't do is look at anyone thing. It's looking at all of the different prejudices that you're mentioning here and how they're coming out in terms of where the roles are and are not. And this is coming out of USC. And it's cracking the big data. So it's almost like it's not shaming. It's just putting out the data so people can see it now because it's going to be there. But and I guess sometimes here's the thing. If someone doesn't do that, I guess we feel some days maybe that we're over – because I know that's why I try to pick out the things that I highlight on my social media stream, because sometimes I know people feel like they're just overwhelmed by all the numbers these days. But these numbers are really important, I think.
Yeah, and I also – I mean, with social media, there's so many ways to it. We talked – I love the way Philip was talking about the other thing before, but you also – bringing up Hollywood, I talked to a lot of people on my entertainment show – and they are. That's why they're starting to do their own social media, because they can't even get hired anymore unless they have so many followers or so many things like that. It becomes a numbers game for them. But what I want you to talk about for the flip side of what you were saying before, Phil, and then I think we need a quick little break here. But talk about, it's become also a lot prevalent here in Ohio. We've got a couple cases where someone has said something on their social media, and now their employer is looking to possibly fire them. I know a fire department person has had a racial rant, and so their fire department's looking to fire him. What kind of policies has that been enacting in companies, and how is it, have you been seeing more of that happen lately?
We're seeing a lot more of it happen, where individuals are taking out their, if you will, they're expressing themselves on social media in manners that are not inconsistent with the culture of the particular companies that they work for. And when you do that, you subject yourself to being terminated. The general rule in this country is employment at will. That means that you can quit anytime you feel like it, and you can be terminated anytime a company feels like it. For any reason, no reason at all. You don't have to have a reason to quit a company, and you don't have to have a reason to fire you. The fact is that a lot of employees and a lot of individuals out there are using social media in a manner that's going to give a company a reason to fire.
Yeah.
The issue that we have, that what employment law says is, it's perfectly fine to fire a person if you have no reason at all to do it. It's perfectly fine to fire someone if you have a reason to do it. It is not fine to fire a person if that reason is because you're discriminating against them. That's what employment law protects them against.
That's
what we're fighting for in Ohio, because Ohio is an at-will state, so you can fire in for any reason. But LGBT doesn't have – you can actually say you're firing because of LGBT, because there's no rights for that. But there's right to work to be fired for any reason if you say – they can do it anyway, so people are trying to get the law passed, but it doesn't help in those type of states, right? Even if I had an LGBT protection, if it's a right to work state, they can find another way around that, correct?
If you're a state that doesn't have protection for LGBT characteristics or the a way someone identifies their own sexual orientation, if you don't have protections in a state that protect you for the way you identify yourself, then an employer, if he finds out that you identify, or she finds out you identify yourself in a way that doesn't match with what that employer wants, then in fact they can fire you. And what they can say is, I fired that person either for no reason at all, which is legitimate, or I fired them for a perfectly legitimate reason. And in this case, legitimate reason was the person's identified sexual orientation. And we didn't want that around here. If there's no laws protecting against that, then guess what? You have no protection. It's the same thing I got the other day, a very funny phone call, from a fellow who said he didn't get a job from a company he was applying for. It was because he was a lawyer. And I said, yeah, well, okay.
Sounds like a joke.
What can I tell you? It's not a protected class of people. It just isn't. And he said, well, he's discriminating against me. I said, yes, he is discriminating against you. But it's not unlawful discrimination.
Right.
And in this particular instance, the person is being discriminated against for their sexual orientation. But in that particular state, it's not unlawful to do that. And so that's okay. I can discriminate against you. I can say, I don't want you working here because you wear blue shoes or because you drive a Ford truck, because I like Chevy and I like red shoes.
Yeah.
And you'd say to me, that's discrimination. I'd say, yes, it is discrimination.
But
it's just lawful discrimination.
Because
it's not a protected class. In this company, you know, Ford truck drivers not protected. Got to work somewhere else. We like Chevy over here. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Let's take a quick break.
Fascinating.
Fascinating.
It really is brilliant.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk more with Phil Gordon. He's the managing partner of Gordon Law Group in Boston, Massachusetts. This is just amazing stuff of what we're talking about of workplace employment laws and advocacy, and I can't wait to hear a little bit more. Let's play a little bit of Preston Wiggins, Into the Unknown. You're listening to Healing Stigma on Left to Straight Radio. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We are back. That was Preston Wiggins with Into the Unknown. Guys, we're having an amazing conversation today. We have Philip Gordon here. He's the managing partner of Gordon Law Group in Boston, Massachusetts. They specialize in employee advocacy law. And we've had a great conversation so far. But, Phil, I want to kind of switch it over to stigma. And let's talk a little bit about what is the difference between stigma and harassment? How is that seen in the workplace? And how do you kind of even find that?
Stigma is simple. So stigma is really a preconceived notion, if you will, about someone's status. So if I am stigmatizing you, I'm stigmatizing you because I see you have a particular status and I have a preconceived notion about what that means about you. Harassment is when you act on those preconceived notions in a negative way.
Okay.
Just having a stigma about somebody is not unlawful. I can think all sorts of thoughts about folks, but if I don't act on them, I haven't acted on them, I haven't done anything bad. Once you raise the level of harassment or causing an adverse employment action to be taken against an individual, that is when employment law steps in and says, let's take a deeper look at this and decide whether or not that's a violation of the law. So what are we seeing? It's a great question in terms of kind of the trends in the workplace and what's happening now as we sort of work our way through the new millennium here. It's 2016. Quite a bit has happened. And where are we seeing things now? Where are we seeing things going? The biggest things we're seeing today are age discrimination. As our workforce ages, and it is, the boomers are coming through, et cetera, as we're seeing people getting older, and people are living longer, we're seeing a significantly higher incidence of age discrimination in the workplace. We're also seeing a real focus today on gender discrimination. It's been a fascinating watching this sort of bubble up again, if you will. You know, it's happened in the past as we went through sort of equal rights and voting rights action, things of that nature, sort of almost 50 years ago. And it was Title VII and a bunch of laws came online to protect folks. We're seeing a reemergence of gender as an issue. I think we're seeing it because we're having a massive resurgence, if you will, of women in the workplace. Women are going to college in much greater numbers than they have in the past. This new millennial group are all getting college degrees or advanced degrees, and they're all going into the workforce, and they want to work in oftentimes traditionally male-dominated workplaces. And as we get a better flow, if you will, of people around the world, as we, our economy becomes globalized, we're seeing the barriers to entry are dropping of getting women and other people into particular occupations. Right? It's easier now because you can go online and you can connect into workplaces in ways you couldn't before, because now people are, you don't even have to go to the office anymore. At some level, there are people who are in the workforce who aren't even identified as men or women because people never even see them. Because they're doing outside consulting or other works. And so we're seeing a greater number of women come in the workforce, and we're now seeing a greater focus on gender inequities. We're seeing a lot of discussion about pay disparities that exist. The gender pay gap has become a big issue. Obama and other politicians have been working in the past few years to really put some regulations and other things in place to fix those issues. We've passed laws in Massachusetts. New York and other states have passed laws as well to work on those problems. California's got some, too, to work on those issues, on the gender pay gap issues. So we're seeing it in age. We're seeing it in gender. We're seeing it with disability. On the one hand, we're seeing significant medical advances that are allowing people with disabilities to do far greater jobs than they ever could before. Right? They're having significantly greater mobility, having significantly higher lifespans. We're having medicines and other things that are allowing people with mental deficiencies to exist at on a mental level, if you will, it's in parity with their coworkers. We're finding medicines that are allowing people to cover up disabilities. People are now able to walk when they couldn't walk before. So we're seeing a lot more disabled people who are able to enter the workforce. But at the same time, with technology and with a lot of other investigative work, employers are now able to identify disabilities far greater than they could in the past. And the stigma of disability has not gone away, and so we're seeing a lot more disability discrimination. Right. Sexual orientation is another thing that's come up.
And Phil, can I interrupt for 1 second there? Can I interrupt just for 1 second?
Absolutely.
Because isn't there also a number of cases that, let's say, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I would imagine now, because naturally I'm working, you know, from the stigma side of this, a number of cases that really just fall in the stigma range. But then, you know, I think of, criminal records. So many things now that, I'm not even mentioning my case, but I think of so many cases where then stigma hangs over someone and they're not able to make it into that next step into the workforce because there is something that is now glaringly in the digital era. This is so much of what, you know, a lot of the work that I'm doing right now is about, is that there are these, I'm not trying to say, it's not necessarily a harassment, it's not a discrimination issue, but there are literally digital stigmas that exist now that prevent swaths of people from entering the workforce. You know, we think of immigration and other things there, but do you get a sense of that as well? That you oftentimes, this just isn't a case, but, you know, you definitely are dealing with a problem here because of technology.
Absolutely. People are, in this day and age, unable to escape a tag that they may have received. So stigma at a lot of levels is a label, right? It's labeling someone for something.
Right.
And once you're labeled with that, it becomes difficult to get away from the label. So it used to be that if you were labeled as something, and, you know, there's the bad side of that, right, which is you're labeled as a sexual predator. Or, you know, the other side of it, which is you're labeled as, an individual with a disability, or you're a person who has a particular religious faith, or you have a particular, or you're a particular age, right? Those are things maybe you don't want to share. So if I'm keeping my religion a secret, or I'm keeping my sexual orientation a secret, or I'm keeping my age a secret, and I don't want future employers to know what that is, and my employer finds out what my religion is, or finds out my age, or finds out my sexual orientation, it used to be I could just leave the employer, move to another part of the country, and start up again.
Yeah.
But now you can't.
No.
Because oftentimes, the tag
is attached to you electronically, and your digital profile in social media somewhere has some indication of your sexual orientation that you will now never escape. So it used to be coming out was a big deal, and it was tough to be, right? You'd come out on your own,
yep.
And if you didn't
yep.
like it, you'd move towns and go somewhere else. And then you could go back and stay
yep.
back where your sexual orientation was. Now, once you're out, that's it.
Yep.
You're out forever, and you can't escape
yep.
that. Or once someone knows that you have a particular religion, and that gets online, you can no longer escape it. Because the community that we work in is no longer localized.
It's
because
virtual.
Of social media. It's virtual.
Yep.
So stigmas now attach. So
yep.
we say to our children, we say to our friends, don't put anything online
yeah.
that you aren't going to want to live with forever. Now, for
yep.
a lot of people and a lot of young kids, that oftentimes means, you know, maybe they've Snapchatted sects. You know, they've done sexting with their friends
yeah,
and
yeah,
Snapchatted
yeah.
naked pictures
yeah.
of themselves. There are lots
right.
of girls in high schools and colleges that have shared naked pictures of themselves that are now that now can't escape those naked pictures. And forever
oh, there was
they're
a school
online.
In Colorado. There was a school where half the class wound up because of something that was a vault storage thing that looked like it was just an app for like a calculator or something. It was some way to hide pictures or whatever. I'm a Luddite. Everybody knows that. But anyway, it's a sad story because what it wound up doing was ripping through an entire graduating class. Scholarships were lost. College acceptances were rescinded. It destroyed families. Yeah. I mean, it ripped through a whole entire graduating class when this broke.
It ruins you for life. Your digital profile
yeah.
can ruin you for life.
Oh, and you're
and
right.
Those
depending on the age of the kids,
those ruin your
yeah,
life.
Yeah, some of those kids were younger and they had, some of the kids were older and they had inappropriate pictures from people who were underage. So some of them also now have to register. Oh my God, I forgot about it. Some
sex
of them
offenders.
In this case, exactly. It depending on like a 1 year age difference. It was an unbelievable.
Yep.
So
once
story.
You're in that sex offender registry, by the way, even if you
yeah.
if you appeal that. Decision,
yeah.
And a judge makes a determination you should be taken off the sexual offender registry. The internet
yeah.
doesn't forget.
No.
Right. Good point.
And that's
no.
it. You're in there now in the sex offender registry, and even if you're not affirmatively currently tagged, if someone
yeah.
does enough background searching on you, they're going to find out that you were at one point listed in the sexual offender registry, and that's the end of you. Or if you
yeah.
served time. And
yeah,
you're out
yeah.
now, and you're out, and you're leading a clean life, conceivably, and you're back in the market. And you go somewhere, someone's going to find out because it is so easy to do an electronic background search, whether
yeah.
it's Corey records or just other background records, other background searching you can do on individuals, you can find out. So stigma
yeah.
is now something, when we talk to our clients about bringing lawsuits or about making complaints or about revealing something about themselves or making a complaint, for example, about a boss, which is going to reveal something
mm-hmm.
about themselves. We talk with them about how is that going to impact you if that information goes in the public, you personally, for the rest of your life? And is that going to lead
mm.
to other problems for you? And are you ready personally for that? And stigma is a huge part of our conversation with our clients.
So
it should be a huge,
yeah,
yeah, it should be a huge part of the thought of the, you know, the individuals who are bringing them. You know, there are a lot of lawyers out there that a case comes in the door and they just get it on file, right?
Yeah.
And I always say to my clients, before you put that case on file, I want you to think about the public record that that's going to create, because it is a public record that you have now sued your employer.
Yeah.
And for many, that itself is a stigma. And you better think about that before you file that lawsuit.
Right.
We talk about that a lot with our clients because it's important to us to have a full representation with them. So we talk about other ways that we can work through that individual's problem with this employer. And filing suit oftentimes is a great way to do it. Filing suit sometimes for many people is not a good
yeah.
way to do it. But we think about the digital profile of our clients a lot, but that's
yeah.
definitely, and that's an issue, and that follows
well,
stigma.
That leads me to another question,
there.
Phil. I was wondering, that's a segue to another question I had. What is the best way in today's day and age, if you feel you have an issue, you feel something is worthy of harassment or the stigma has reached the harassment level, what is the employee's best recourse at this time? Should they stay within the company hierarchy? Should they go to the EEOC? Should they go to a lawyer? What makes that determination of where they should go from here? And what's the best protection for the employee?
It's a deep strategic conversation and a deep strategic decision for each person. It starts right off the bat with a discussion about what is in fact happening to the individual employee. What are they facing at work? Is it, you know, verbal? Is it physical? How often is it happening? Is it truly hostile and offensive? Who's doing it? Is a coworker doing it? Is a supervisor doing it? Have others joined in this harassment or whatever it is, adverse employment action that you're suffering from? Is it something that's only directed at you, or is it directed to lots of people? Is it severe? Is it pervasive? And then we talk with the person about their own personal perspective. How is it impacting them? Are they suffering? You know, how are they suffering from it? Maybe they've been dealing with weight loss. Maybe they've been dealing with a loss of sexual appetite with their spouse or their partner. Maybe they've been dealing with hair loss. Maybe they've been dealing with weight gain. Maybe they've been having serious bowel troubles or other issues, other stress that exists in their life. Maybe they've been suffering other personal financial problems as a result of what they're going through. Maybe they have to go into therapy. So the first thing we do is really work with them to analyze and discuss what it is that they're actually suffering from and just how bad is it. Is it ordinary garden variety stuff that, hey, you're just overreacting? And I can tell you from experience, having seen lots of cases go through, the types of cases that are dismissed, and this thing that you're talking about is an overreaction to it. I'll give you an example of what can be considered an overreaction. So a woman will say, I'm being sexually harassed by a particular guy in my office. And I'll say, okay, tell me about it. And she'll say, well, he always invites me out to lunch every single day. I'll say, okay, what is that really about? And she'll say, well, the workplace, we all get together and we go out to lunch. But he always makes a point of stopping by my office to ask me if I want to join everybody else for lunch. And I'll ask, say, is that it? Is that everything that he's done to you? And is he asking other people out to lunch? Has he gone by and said to everybody, go out to lunch? And are you potentially, is there something that's causing, what is causing you to think that this man is, had some kind of sexual interest in you beyond inviting you to join the whole office for lunch? Maybe he's inviting you to lunch because he just thinks you ought to join everybody because they try to have a cohesive office environment. We work through that. On the other hand, you have other things that are going on. I have a woman who used to work in the SWAT division of a state police in one of the particular states, and she's one of the very first women to reach that level. And her sergeant, her boss, they come back from these massive, and they're usually, they sit around all day long and do nothing. And then all of a sudden, they get the call, and they got to go. And it's a massive adrenaline rush for all the people in the SWAT, including her. And you do these big operations, and then and whether it's successful or not, you come back. And he decided that at the close of each one of those, the best way to get out of his adrenaline is to have sex with her. He raped her.
Wow.
And he would do it every day. Every day they had an operation, he'd come back and he'd rape her. And there was conversation with her was at some level, okay, was this, first of all, was this consensual? Was this something that, you know, you were interested in doing with him? And that's, you know, the beginning discussion of was this rape or consensual intercourse that you two were going through. And we determined, because she told me, that he said to her, you're the first woman here, I'm your sergeant, you'll never work in this business again if I don't get to have sex with you at the close or everything. And by the way, you like it, was what he used to say to her. Now, she's traumatized.
Yeah.
And by the time she got to us to have that conversation, she was a mess is the best way to describe her.
Yeah.
We had, you know, significant amounts of therapy, all sorts of other stuff, because here she was. She had achieved at a lot of levels her dream. She had made the SWAT team. That's a huge accomplishment. And for a woman to make the SWAT team and to make the front line of the SWAT team, not administrative support staff, was enormous. And now
it's almost extra expectations, isn't it? Because I was going to say that earlier when you have when we're talking about gender inequalities, then when a woman does rise to one of these, it's almost as if all eyes are then on them. There's almost extra expectations.
It was a phenomenal a phenomenal experience that she was going through, devastating to her across a whole pile of levels. But frankly, you know, anybody who's experiencing discrimination is going to see. I'm the first black person or African American person to achieve a particular thing, or I'm the first woman to get somewhere. I'm the first person, you know, I'm the first gay man to be accepted in this group, or I'm the first. You know, look at the sports. Look at athletes that are coming out as gay, and there, there's a whole pile of firsts. And then, because of that, so in her case, because she's a woman, she was now being subjected to harassment, and he said to her, and he was very clear with her about it, as we understood it. I never spoke with him because the case closed up with a settlement. But as we understood it, he would tell her, that's the deal. Welcome to my team. And everybody on my team, since I'm the sergeant, everybody on my team does what I say. And there's a thin blue line, I think it's a pretty thick blue line, that exists out there that cops don't rat on each other. And you put all that together, and that was it. And so for a very, very long time, she was subjected to rapes from this guy, and it was horrendous for her. But we have that conversation with each person. You've seen sort of some pretty heavy-duty extremes, and I can tell you about noose cases and other things that go on in the workplaces. And we get, you know, dozen calls a day oftentimes here, and every one of them, every person has their own story. Sometimes
can I interrupt here for 1 second and do my old-fashioned thing now? This is what I normally do. I interrupt. But in this case, Scott, I just want to, and our listeners to understand, what I do with Healing Stigma and what has happened to me has been crafted. I didn't understand when what happened to me happened, really, the understanding of what stigma was about. I was an English teacher. I was a rowing coach. But I've understood stigma and what it is that I do with Healing Stigma and how to use my teaching capabilities as a result of having a number of, I would say, extremely fortunate conversations. And I would say a large majority of those conversations were with Phil. And now you understand, Scott, when we talk, we have this conversation, why I'm so pleased he's on. And I'm sorry to talk about you in the third person there, but when I was understanding stigma and raging at how it affected so many different people and making the connections from my case to so many that don't have, if you will, the front page headlines or you know, the support that I had, you know, in my partner or whatever it would be. But when I started making those connections, almost all of those raging conversations were it somehow, some way, directed through or had the guidance of Phil. Just so you get it now and you understand what it means. And I'm sure every one of those calls, every one of those stories is just as excruciating for the person at that time. And I'm telling you, Phil, you're amazing at what you do. You really are. Your personal quality is amazing. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
The conversations with each person are very, very individualized. Scott, I didn't want to lose your question, and I appreciate what Kevin's saying, because what Kevin's giving you insight into is that every single person, every single employee who calls my office, whether they're the CEO of a company or they're a famous person like Gretchen Carlson, who I do not represent and did not call my office, but whether they, at whatever level they're at, they're facing something deeply personal to them. So when you ask the question, what is it that person is supposed to do? The very first thing we do is figure out what it is they're suffering from and how it is they're perceiving the experience, because that's the only way we can then design the solution that's appropriate for them. For Gretchen Carlson, clearly the solution involved a couple things. The first part of it was make internal complaints. And apparently she did that. According to her complaint, she made a bunch of internal complaints because that was going to be the way to solve the problem of what she was suffering from. Individuals are working at Fox News, according to her complaint, as well as what she was experiencing with in her interaction with Roger Ailes.
Yeah.
And her complaint has got some relatively good detail in it to give you a sense at least of what her allegations were. But the start of where she went was probably to tell the person who she's working with, hey, cut it out. And then the next step is, okay, I'll make a complaint to HR. And then, you know, she takes the further steps and makes further complaints, and eventually she gets fired, which retaliation, of course, is a massive issue that exists in the business. But what it is that each individual does will depend on their individual circumstances, what they're capable of doing. I'll have clients who will say to me, Phil, I am not capable of taking that step. I need you to do that for me. And I will have other clients who will say to me, you tell me what it is I need to do, and I can take care of it myself completely. And then I'll have others who will ask me to ghostwrite letters, and I'll ghostwrite, you know, notes to human resources. Or, you know, someone will call up and they'll say, hey, I just got a really bad review in my folder. I've been working here for 10 years. I've had great reviews all the way through. And when my boss asked me to have sex with her or him, I said no, and now suddenly my reviews are coming out really badly. And I need to put something in the file to counteract that review, and we'll write something. We'll help them draft something. Sometimes it'll come from me directly, and there's an impact when I show up on the scene. And sometimes it'll come, we'll just draft it for the client to go put in the file themselves, and they'll send it off to HR. But there's lots of different steps that sometimes need to be taken. Some of it will just be I'll tell a client, hey, I appreciate what you're saying. That's not enough evidence. I need you to collect evidence. And I'll work them through how do you collect emails, how do you collect cell phone records, how do you collect, you know, text messages, how do you get stuff that will then be enough for us to take whatever particular step it is that you need. But every one of them is really individualized, and as Kevin can share with you, he can do it on his own experience, walk you through sort of, you know, what he faced. But every one of us, I'm sure, Scott, in your life, and I know in my own career, we've faced interesting situations at work and how we choose to respond to them. Some people will say, as a lot of people at Fox News said, hey, buck up, that's part of the system, that's how you make it. And you got to suffer a lot of slights, a lot of arrows to get there. And other people will say, I don't want to suffer slights and arrows, I'm not interested in it. I've had clients that African-American men who've come to me and have said to me, every time I open up my locker, there's a noose in there, or there's a hood hung above my locker. And I'll say to them, why do you put up with that? And they'll say, because that's what I got to do, because I got to bring money home for my family, and it doesn't bother me. And I'm like, really? Okay. I mean, I have nothing to say about that, but the consequence of making that complaint may very well be losing your job. Now, you may have a great lawsuit,
right.
And that may be terrific, and we may have a fantastic lawsuit worth piles of money, but you got to get there.
And how do you pay for the milk to get there and everything, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
How do you pay for the milk? How do you put medications? How do you pay for the medications that your kids need? How do you put heat? How do you pay the rent? How do you take care of the gas to get to, you know, to get to work every day? And if you don't have another job lined up, what are you going to do? And so for every single person who comes in the front door with a question for us, we have to work through what it is that they're suffering from. Maybe the adverse employment action's already happened. Maybe, by the way, they're a CEO looking for another job, and maybe they want us to negotiate an employment agreement with a new company. That's also a conversation with them to have with them about how do you negotiate a new agreement. Will I negotiate the agreement for you? You want to negotiate the agreement on your own? What are all the consequences that exist? What kind of compensation do you want? Those kinds of things. Or maybe there's an environment you're leaving, and maybe we help you negotiate your new job. And once you're at your new job and you feel really comfortable that you're now safe, then we go back at the old company. And then we bring suit. Or then we bring our complaint, our internal complaints, because you don't want to do it while you're there because you can't withstand the potential job loss and the retaliation. Yeah. It's strategic, correct.
Right.
It's a long answer to what is a very short question. Short question being, so what's the strategy you take when you're suffering a problem at work? And it's a long answer because for each person it's different, and I can give you tons of examples of how we work through them, but they're very, very, oftentimes very, very different what we choose to do.
Yeah, it was very well said. We definitely appreciate it. All right, well, I thank you for that. We are running out of time. I want you to give your website out. You have a great website. Talks about everything you do. And there's even a contact form where you can. You guys will do some evaluations of people's cases to see if there's a case, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we speak with employees all day long, and individuals will call us up and ask us what we think of particular cases from all over the country. And or they can send us information on a contact form that's on our website and describe their problem in as much detail as they want to share with us online before they speak with one of the lawyers in my office. But, yeah, you can go to our law firm's website. It's at Gordon, GordonLLP.com, LimaLimaPapa.com, and all one word. Go over there, check us out, and, you know, give us a contact or give us a ring if you have a question about what you're dealing with at work, whether you're looking for a new job or dealing with an issue at your current job. Or whatever you're up to, give us a call. We'd be happy to help you evaluate it out. But, yeah, that's what we do, and we represent employees and their issues they're having with their employers. That's the focus of our
Tell them Healing Stigma Radio sent you, and Phil will get you a free cup of coffee.
I'd be delighted to do it.
Hey, but seriously, read the blog as well, because one of the things I will tell you, folks taking a look at that website, is that the fascinating mind that we're talking to tonight, there's a whole bunch of opinions that come out there, and Phil is one of those people who is as good on paper as he is here on the podcast. And really, some of the stuff you write about, I just find it so fascinating, and I'm always interested in what strikes your mind on any given day in current events. So go check out the site, folks. Even if you're not in trouble at work today, it's a really interesting site to take a look at, because here's the thing I would just say is, and I would say this as well maybe as a final close for you, Phil, is our work is so much a big part of our identity that it's good to think about it before it's kind of under stress. Isn't that true?
I agree with you completely. When you ask people, tell them about themselves, they oftentimes tell you where they work before they tell you anything else about themselves. That's where we spend most of our lives. So when people lose their jobs or suffer stress at work, it's a significant impact on them.
Thanks for what you do, Phil. You were fantastic tonight. For anyone who reaches out, I'm telling you, I couldn't think of a better person to be, what was it again, best lawyer in the country. Congratulations. And, hey, what's next? What's next? What are you looking forward to next for the firm? What's the next big thing, my friend? If you had to give us a closing thought.
We're growing right now and working with a lot of employees dealing with, so one of the big things we're dealing with these days is retaliation. People who are getting terminated or some type of adverse employment action because they complained about something. So that's a massive growing part of our practice and working with people who have complaints
about
work.
Well, let's do this. Scott, maybe you could come back on again and we could do a show about that. Naturally, I know our schedules are all busy and crazy, but I would like to do maybe another show. I know we're going to be doing some blog series on that as well, but let's think about that because I'd like to do that as a whole other show. The retaliation issue sounds very, very important. And I know you're busy, but I'd like to extend that invite.
I'd be delighted to talk. Be delighted to talk about it anytime you guys want.
Great.
Well, we definitely appreciate your time, Phil. Thank you so much. We're going to definitely get you back on because, like I said, we put forth about 8 questions. Kevin and I put our minds together, not sticking with 8 whole questions together. We were impressed.
Yeah.
And we only got to 2 of them because it's just such a fascinating subject. But thank you
for
your time.
I can do this with you for hours.
Oh, I appreciate it, man. Stay on the line for us, Phil. We're going to go ahead and do one quick break. We're going to come back and wrap things up. We've been talking to Philip Gordon of the Gordon Law Group in Boston, Massachusetts. We're going to play a little bit of Matt Van Fossen. Time ain't what it used to be because we're running out of here fast. You're listening to Healing Stigma on Left to Straight Radio. We'll be right back.
Okay.
And we're back. That was Matt Von Fossen with Time Ain't What It Used to Be. Wow, that was so informative, Kevin. I love that. I think that was one of our top two interviews, I got to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, you can really learn a lot from that. And, you know, like I said, I think off air, that's in terms of consultation fees, there's not many of us that could afford Phil's time for that tonight. But that was a really interesting show. And I think it's one of the really important topics that we all, you know, at some point in time, when we face uncertainty in the workplace, that's a show that I'm going to ask so many people, just go and listen to that, because you really, you know, someone you may know will benefit from it. And that's not just an ad for Phil and what he does, which I think he's incredible for, but it really builds the groundwork, you know, of where that power is in the employer-employee relationship, because it's going to be there somewhere every day.
Exactly. I think it was some great information. Like I said, I thought we came up with some really good questions, and we really only got to about two of them because there was just so much other information that he was able to provide we didn't even think of. And it's just, it's such a big subject anymore, and it's all about livelihood. I mean, your work is your livelihood, and there are so many complications to it and the stigma that can be involved for it. I loved how we talked about the difference of perception plus actions on it, so you kind of know how to work that. And I thought it was just a fantastic talk. It was very good.
Excellent. Well, you know, that's what it is. We're starting these conversations, Scott. He'll be back. And I think the work that we're all doing at these different parts, you know, we don't want stigma. We don't want, you know, harassment and all these different parts. As people understand them and how to take appropriate actions, you know, we do hope to make a better, you know, workplace, family, community. It all has that effect. And tonight was a conversation that I think was just a beginning. We'll have him back for sure. Especially the retaliation one is a hot topic. It'll be in the blogs as well as we get up and talk on the show about it.
Super duper. Well, let's go ahead and wrap this up, guys. We appreciate you hanging on. I know this is one of our longer shows. Poor Kevin's battery, I think, is almost dead on his phone, but
it was worth
the effort. It was great. We have a couple of great shows coming up for you next week. We finally get our Groovalados on to talk to you.
Yay.
We played a couple of times. We have Jody Allman coming up. We have Richard Schneider calling in from Gay and Lesbian Review. It's going to be a couple of great weeks of shows coming up as usual. Please, if you haven't downloaded the app yet, we always like to have you get on there. Use your iPhone or your Android. Go into your app store on your phone. Type in Left of Straight Radio, and it comes right up. Absolutely free. You'll never miss an episode. Plus, we have all new season of my other shows, so I think you have a lot of fun listening time there. We have the website, healingstigmaradio.com. Please check that out, and you'll get more in-depth information on all of our guests that we have on. Follow the conversation on Twitter at Heal Stigma Radio, and on Facebook, Healing Stigma Radio. We're out there everywhere. There's a lot of information out there, and we're happy to bring it to the peoples.
Absolutely. Well said.
All right. Well, it's my pleasure to speak with you as always, my friend. I hope you have a wonderful rest of the week. I'm so excited to look for that blog post you have coming up pretty soon. Thanks for being on the show as always, and have a great night, Kevin.
Hey, thanks, Scott. I'll go recharge and talk to everybody next week. I look forward to it. Be good.
All right, guys, we are out of here. If it's Thursday, Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio, 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Have a great night.